Hey, welcome into Stone Cold Shows, episode 10 of season 2. I'm Brandon Stranger. I'm joined by Charlie Polillo and Josh Jordan. You can read Charlie's column weekly on sportsmap.com and follow him on X at Polillo. Follow Josh at JoshJordan975 on X and read his work daily on sportsmap.com. Guys, in a series that seemed to be shell or get shelled, Houston grabbed a much-needed win against the defending champs, Rangers. Charlie, you said last week that if Ronel Blanco was once again dominant against the Rangers after they had just seen him, I'm paraphrasing here, but that would be more impressive. Okay, well, after seeing Ronel Blanco's third start, are you starting to believe that maybe Houston's caught lightning in a bottle with a guy who is becoming the most unlikeliest of stoppers in this rotation?
Not quite yet as a season-long proposition, but to deal with a quality lineup as successfully did the second time around, the route to stabilization for this rotation is out there. I mean, the weekend against the Rangers overall, a panic-stricken fan base, at least that portion thereof, can exhale, right? 4-11 was gruesome. The Friday game against the Rangers was just a clown show from the start. I know they drew closer, but my goodness, getting whacked again. 4-11, can't win a home game under any circumstances. And then to respond the way they did Saturday and Sunday. I mean, not that they're out of the woods and all is well at Astroworld again, right? 6-11 starting the week, one of the four worst records in Major League Baseball. But just a reminder, a slice of the season, we only get into the second inning of the season this week. And let's use the Rangers as an example, as a point of context. Last season, the Rangers had an 8-game losing streak. And then less than a week later, began a stretch where they lost 7 out of 8. These things happen over 162 games. I mean, that's kind of an extreme case, but it turned out pretty well ultimately for the Rangers. Ditto in play for the Astros this year. If they have a 4-11 stretch somewhere, July, August, subject to what happens between now and then, it'll be somewhere from ripping your hair out to uh-oh. But a 17 game stretch of the schedule. It's just a stretch of the schedule. This team still has very core talent in its everyday lineup. And speaking to that rotation, the revelation that is Blanco, you know, if he even gives you to the all-star break, I don't mean with an ERA under one, but just as a good, steady starter, I find Christian Javier to be even more encouraging than Blanco to this point, because Blanco, there may be an element of flash in the pan to him, right? Let's see, relative to, say, JP France last year. But Javier, we know, can pitch at an elite level. It had been a while, but he's been terrific so far. So if you have him as a top of the rotation guy, Verlander presumably starting his season this weekend, cross your fingers on Fromber. The nucleus of a good rotation is there. And by the way, the American League West 2.5 weeks into the season is the worst in baseball. So even having been 6-11, the Astros up 4-3 on the Rangers, if you want to file away for tie-breaking procedures come the end of the regular season, 2.5 games out of first place when the Astros were 6-11 going into the Braves series. I mean, not all is well, but all was never lost.
What a difference it makes when you have Blanco and Javier and you get some good starting pitching. Look what can happen. They're not out of the woods yet here. As I'm looking at the stats across the league, they're second to last in ERA. The Astros are right now 5.32. Only the Colorado Rockies are worse than them right now. So, but as Charlie alluded to, if you get Fromber back and you get Justin Verlander back and Blanco keeps doing what he's doing, it's incredible what they got out of JP France last year, and it looks like they've done it again with Blanco this year. How fortunate they are. Javier, man, losing that weight, he looks like a different pitcher now. He really does. So I'm impressed. If they can just get the pitching to be consistent, I think they'll be in good shape, because they're doing well with the bats. The bats are good. You know, in OPS, they're really good this year. They're third currently right now. It's just when you get to runs, that's where it's been tricky for these guys. We've seen all the guys left in scoring position. You know, Astros are, you know, top three in OPS, but they're 13th in runs scored. So as the season plays out, hopefully that number will, you know, kind of average out and the runs will start being at the top of the league, just like their OPS is.
Yeah. Runners in scoring position, right? They were pretty lame the first couple of weeks. Saturday, 6 of 16 at bats with runners in scoring position, 3 of 8 on Sunday, and Altuve wasn't worried about runners in scoring position. I'll just hit solo home runs. It's a good core ball club. You know, it's an astrocentric view on these things, which is fine and fun, right? It's Stone Cold Strohs, not Stone Cold Major League Baseball at large, which would be a pretty wordy title for this thing. Yeah. But it's natural, especially for fans who are so tunnel visioned on the Astros. I'm not concerned with how things are relative to the rest of the league. And I don't want to hear about other teams' problems. Astros, Astros, Astros. It's not a great team anymore. It's not a great roster anymore. But it's a good team with a good roster. And so if you get Fromber, if he's all right, and that elbow is just a mere hiccup, and Verlander, not 2022 all-time great season-level Verlander, just the good, solid starter he was after coming back to the Astros last year. And then you have Blanco and Javier. Okay, the chicken little criers. Well, what about the fifth spot? Hunter Brown and Spencer Arrighetti and Brandon Belak. I don't want him as an option. And that Blair guy. We can wait. Someone put together a list of the teams that have five above-average starting pitchers. Even four above-average starting pitchers. So where the Astros are within the realm of their division, within the realm of Major League Baseball, they're all right. They just had an extremely sucky first couple of weeks and change.
To your point, the Astros are very fortunate right now that the Rangers are only a 500 club right now. And so you're not that far out of it being in last place relative to where the Rangers are at in first place. It's not really that big of a hole to dig out of. Thankfully for them, Charlie, you mentioned Arrighetti. His debut was less than ideal. Hunter Brown's carrying a 16 ERA right now. The prospect of Arrighetti, Brown, and France as the projected rotation for a Braves series does not seem exciting particularly, but we've seen what this team can do and still do when it gets solid starting pitching. You've got Justin Verlander, who seems to be on the verge. He may be a week out. Fromber Valdez, who is also kind of a conversation in and of itself, the fact that he didn't get any imaging, we can get into that a little bit, but he says he's not going to require a rehab start. That's surprising. But the point is, Charlie, is what ails this team just get fixed when Verlander and Fromber return?
Fundamentally, hey, if 60% of their rotation for the majority of the season was to be Hunter Brown, Spencer Arrighetti, and JP France, then the goose probably would be cooked. So if Verlander breaks down or Father Time makes a serious move on him, and you know what? It wasn't about just ramping up belatedly for the season and some shaky defense at Corpus Christi. Verlander's just a lot more hittable now, and he's going to pitch to an ERA of 4.30 instead of 3.30, much less 2.30, much less 1.75, then that's a real problem. Fromber, I think we're unanimous on this, just very strange to not err on the side of caution when his pitching elbow is bothering him and takes him out of the rotation. I mean, even the fact that it cost them Miguel Diaz, which wasn't calamitous, but Fromber's fine. We're not even going to put him on the injured list right away. Just weird. You know, I don't know if living in denial in the short term, but if, and yeah, maybe they become capital I, capital Fs, and maybe the answers to these questions are negative and it becomes an anvil that pulls things down. But if you give me just solid health and solid pitching from Verlander and Fromber, and then you add what they have behind them, Javier, surf this Blanco wave for as long as you can, and you figure out the fifth starter, and then 3 months from now, Luis Garcia, perhaps. Lance McCullers, perhaps. This is a team as a yes or no question. Do they make the playoffs? My answer is still clearly yes.
Yeah, it's yes for me, and I tweeted out or X'd out during Hunter Brown's start, like, get ready for the tipping pitches narrative to come. And sure enough, he got some of those questions after the game. But as I tweeted out, it's hard to believe he's tipping pitches when his ERA was over 5 last year. It's not like it was so great and now it's so poor. So I think it's, you know, a thing with Hunter Brown. They got to figure that out. He's got to command the fastball a little bit better. That's what separates him from JP France is, you know, France may get shelled, but you don't have to pull him out in the first inning. He can at least just, you know, continue to grind and try and keep you somewhat in the game. With Hunter Brown, It literally occurred to me. I'm like, we've seen position players come in and just flip the ball up there at 70 miles an hour just to get some outs in a blowout game. It really occurred to me. I'm like, why doesn't Hunter Brown just lob the ball up there and just eat some innings for the Astros? Like, you can't pitch any worse than you've been pitching trying to get guys out. Maybe just, you know, batting practice, throw it up there and eat some innings for your bullpen. I just thought that was kind of funny.
Speaking of father time, Jose Abreu. Currently hitting 111 as we record this with an OPS of 313. And there really don't seem to be any signs of him pulling out of it, regardless of what Jeff Bagwell may campaign on a broadcast otherwise. His backup is John Singleton, who's hitting 250 right now. That's better, but not good. Jake Myers currently hitting 229 right now. So this lineup has some holes in it. There's been some talk about Joey Loperfido being elevated from the minors, especially after his weekend of hitting, what, 3 home runs in a single game. I think Dana Brown's tried to pour some cold water on that a little bit and just say, like, they're, you know, they want to see some more out of him. But obviously, there's been a clamoring to see something different, kind of the same clamoring, honestly, that I was guilty of last year and wanting to see John Singleton elevated. And Singleton hasn't been the worst for you. He gives at least professional at-bats. Patient, you hope for him to work walk more than anything. But Charlie, Josh, what do we think is going to be the ultimate outcome here with Abreu? He's still owed a lot of money, still has a whole other year on his contract. We talked about, can they afford to fade him? But I can't imagine fading includes a guy that's hitting under 200.
Yeah, he's been so extremely bad. Did deliver an opposite field double with some thump, but even that was opposite field. I mean, he can't turn or has not been able to turn on anything, laid on all fastballs. His other hits are basically ground ball singles. You know, you're hoping like last year, where into mid-May, Abreu's OPS was 515, I think, was where he bottomed out. Well, that looks like Mount Everest from where he's looking. You know, again, the season's third week this year, and he's a year older. And, well, his back of his baseball card, that's a year older, too. If he wasn't making the money that he was making, I think there's a good chance that he would have already been released or straight up benched. You know, the fact that he's just a first baseman, DH, pinch hitter, right, limits the roles you can cast him in. He's either going to start or he's going to sit. But that John Singleton at 32 years old with a track record of not being able to hit major leagues. I mean, Saturday, both within the ballpark and all over the Astro fan landscape, you know, 2 at bats with the bases loaded and nothing. It's a sinkhole. But the first baseman and Jake Myers, okay, the sinkhole's the 8 and 9 spots now in the lineup. That Joe Espada didn't wait too long to drop Abreu from 5th opening day to 6th to 7th. To 8th. I know many are waiting for 10th, as in not in that lineup at all. Well, he has benched him, right? Multiple games where, okay, it's John Singleton getting the starts. No, Victor Caratini's not going to become a full-time answer at first base. Props to him for a couple significant hits, but just go look at the back of his baseball card. This is not a guy who's a plus hitter who says, okay, he can be a quality everyday first baseman or catcher if you want to try Yiner at first base. But I think Abreu, out of deference, out of the finances, you know, the line to walk, if you're a Jim Crane, if you're anyone, you don't want to just give up and like $25 million, $30 million more left on the contract, $35 million more on fire. And there's probably that little part of you that some team picks him up after he clears waivers. They pay him the minimum. And geez, if he contributes for them while you're paying him all this money. But you're doubling down on the damage. The money is the money, right? You're not going to get that back. But if it's continually a lesser option in your lineup than you otherwise have, when do you pull that plug? You don't pull it for John Singleton. Is there a number of at-bats for Joey Loperfido, right? Dana Brown on his weekly radio interview, well, we want to see him cut down on his strikeout some. Yeah, how about Abreu cutting down on his strikeout some? How about Singleton career long cutting down on his strikeouts a lot? So, you know, I think the clock ticks on this. But that Loperfido does have the very high strikeout numbers. But geez, 10 home runs the first 13 games. You live with strikeouts galore if you're going to get some punch out of the first base position. And he hasn't played a whole lot of first base, but 25 years old and athletic enough to play second base as well as center field, you'd think he'd adapt okay. And it's not like Abreu gives you gold glove work over there anyway. But I would think May 1st at the earliest for Lo Perfido to get a look. And, you know, if you get Bregman back and he kind of starts his season after his illness, 1 through 7, you're pretty strong, and 8 and 9 are bad. Well, look at lineups all over Major League Baseball. I mean, within the American League West, the Seattle Mariners lineup basically stinks 1 through 9. I mean, Julio Rodriguez as an OPS in the 500s, if he's over 500 now, and gets picked off to end a game for a Mariner loss on Sunday. So again, there are Astro-level problems, and then there's the universe of Major League Baseball, and whose lineup is great 1 through 9? Whose lineup is better than the Astros 1 through 6? The Braves, the Dodgers, maybe the Rangers, the end.
Yep. Yeah, I'm going to give a spot of credit for he's not running Abreu out there every single day. So I'm happy to see that. And, you know, Singleton's been, well, compared to Abreu, he's been pretty good, especially for Singleton. But if you look at, you know, Abreu, people are all getting excited. Oh, he got a couple hits the other day. I know he had the one double, but for the most part, people are getting all excited for seeing ice singles, you know, going through the infield. You know, it's pretty much over when you get to that point with a ball player. And right now, if he had enough at bats to qualify, he'd have the worst OPS in Major League Baseball. So, you know, we're not out of the woods with him, but they're going to keep running him out there. And the thing with Lo Perfido, they said he'd be a nice, what, depth piece? Is that what he said? He'll be a nice utility piece for us, is what Dana Brown said about Lo Perfido. So I wouldn't get too excited that they're automatically going to play him a bunch, but he's a young player. You need him playing a lot, not just sitting on the bench and only getting a couple at bats a week. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with him. But yeah, with Abreu, they're just going to suck it up and keep starting him. And like Charlie said, they'll just bury him at the bottom of the batting order. It's still a good offense, and they're just going to hope that he figures it out. I don't know if there's much else they can do. They're not going to DFA him.
Abreu, all right, work with me on this. He feels like a pack of cigarettes in the Astros lineup. You know, you bought a carton, the crazy money, I guess, those go for these days, and it finally hits you hard enough that these are terrible for me. But I just can't quit cold turkey, right? The money I poured into it, and, you know, they used to be good, or for me, or I liked them at least. So I don't know. Singleton's one of those patches, and maybe Lo Perfido is the true solution waiting to happen. I mean, maybe not. It's not like he's considered an elite prospect, but at some point you get to where anything other than just sparking up the smoke.
So would that make Lo Perfido Nicorette in that analogy?
I said work with me. I have to work with you.
Yeah. Well, look, we're also, you know, I guess with, like you said, with Bregman returning from illness, hopefully that will prevent us from ever having to see Abreu and Singleton back to back in a lineup. But through all this, we really kind of covered up the lead here. Or, I mean, and I guess, you know, I heard, you know, John and Lance kind of saying this too. We just kind of take Jose Altuve for granted. The guy's hitting 380 right now, and his OPS is just under 1,200, and we just kind of expect it. Charlie talked about just being Astros problems. You've got a guy, Ronel Blanco, who comes out of nowhere, who's pitching like he's stolen Justin Verlander's chi, and Jose Altuve is hitting like old school Reggie Jackson right now. We haven't even talked about it, but again, that just, I think, shows kind of how spoiled we are. The Astros have had this dynastic run over a 7-year period in which they have been so dominant, we just expect it, and we kind of bitch about the small stuff relative to other teams. And meanwhile, Jose Altuve just on a march towards the Hall of Fame, like we really haven't seen on this team ever, especially in such an efficient fashion. I mean, obviously Biggio had his own campaign, but wasn't nearly as efficient as what Jose Altuve has been able to do. Biggio's was made up over longevity is what I mean by that. So just amazing stuff. We're not even really getting to because of just all the other things, the moving parts and what the expectations of this team are. Some good things to be encouraged about. Almost maddening in some aspects because they're wasting such a good start from Jose Altuve, who can be streaky. And right now he's on a heater, literally the greatest Astro ever. I just don't want to hear an argument. He is slander proof in my book. And speaking of Reggie Jackson was on John Heyman and Joel Sherman's podcast. And I want to read you this quote that came out of that conversation because I think it's worth reacting to for several reasons. Quote, being fiscally responsible is what kicked us out of the Snell deal. He signed a 2-year deal for $62 million. That's too much for him. He's been hurt a couple times. He's got an option on his own. Between the 4 or 5 people who make decisions with the Astros, we don't play that game. So I think there's a lot to unpack there. Let's start with just the snail comments. Charlie, what's your immediate reaction to the substance of what Reggie Jackson had to say in his evaluation of Blake Snell?
Well, I was fine with not going there for Blake Snell. I mean, the rotation was crying out for help. But I'm wary of guys who start seasons late. They can be more apt to come down injured. Let's not overreact to the fact that Snell 2 starts in with the Giants has not been good. His ex-team, the Rays, mauled him over the weekend. But this is a guy who never, ever goes beyond 6 innings, rarely gets you through 6 innings. He's thrown more than 120 innings once in the last 5 seasons. It happened to be last year. Perfect timing. Wins the Cy Young Award as he hits the market. But I could understand the discipline there. But Reggie was wrong in talking about the injuries. Snell's not had any injuries within the last 3 years. And the idea that fiscally responsible, then you turn around and give a closer 5 years, $95 million. Okay, not $31 million, but in total commitment, $95 million as opposed to max $62 on Snell. So I thought there was some inconsistency there. I just find it interesting that Reggie Jackson, and good for him for speaking out and having a role that he's happy to have where he's deemed relevant within the organization. But it's just increasingly clear that Dana Brown does not fully wear the pants that one associates with a general manager wearing those pants in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, and it's just a reminder that this is not how Luno ran the front office back in the day. I think there's a lot less nerds in the room, a lot more older ball players giving their opinions. I think it's funny. Now they're using the back of the baseball card thing with the braid to be like, well, if you look at the back of his card, he's a notorious slow starter. It's like, oh, great. So now we're using that line to justify why he's not very good. But let's be honest about the Snell thing. The fact that they were even considering it and there were reports about it shocks me. This doesn't feel like a thing that the Astros would have done, to where, you know, he has the player option. So if you take a gamble on him, you sign him, and then if he does have a good year and you win on that gamble, he can just go right back out and be a free agent again and leave your team. So I get why they did that. I remember when the Correa negotiations were going on that the Astros didn't want to have player options. They don't really play that game. So it just cements the fact that this is Jim Crane mostly running this thing and Dana Brown's kind of doing the day-to-day business. But I think this is Jim Crane is kind of the de facto general manager. And I mean, there's nothing we could do about it. We just have to hope that he keeps learning and gets better at it. And obviously his track record's pretty good.
And specifically to Snell, I would have been happy with the risk. And I presume the Astros actually would have been okay if Snell had taken whatever the Astros offer actually was. Sometimes teams float that, hey, we're in on this guy. Psst, we're trying to get after that guy. So fans, any others who maybe are being critical of how you're going about your business, well, at least they tried. I think they just hoped that Snell's market was really going to crash and maybe they could get him at $22 million or $21 million instead of $31 million. But if you've gotten Snell for $31 million and he was a stud and helped you get back to that fifth World Series of this era, and then he left as a free agent, okay. Right, the concerning risk is, well, what if he comes here and he has a middling year or has injury problems or both and gives you 128 innings with a 380 ERA and it's, I opt in, and then you're on the hook for $31 million in 2025. So it was a sensible business decision for the Astros to make. But again, when you have one person saying one thing, another person saying another, Dana Brown, well, there was no one out there who'd be remotely worth compared to our internal options. Jordan Montgomery helped end your season last year and helped the Rangers win the World Series. Now, I'm not saying it was obligatory that the Astros should have offered him the deal that he ultimately took with Arizona. You know, a deal so bad for the player that he fired Scott Boras over it last week. But in the end, it'll be about the results. And if their pitching sorts itself out and his team's back in the playoffs and performs credibly in the postseason, all bygones will be bygones on all this stuff.
Josh, I was going to ask that exact question. I want you to react to what Charlie just brought up again about Dana Brown's comments he made after they missed out on Snell and they were asking about other potential free agents that were out there. And I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but paraphrasing, and as Charlie put it, saying that basically what was out there left on the market was comparable to their internal options, which seems crazy considering that Jordan Montgomery was one of those options out there. And now you've got Hunter Brown carrying a 16 ERA. Considering all the question marks, does that look even more odd now from Dana Brown? And now that we know that there's a multi-person committee, is there a possibility that maybe that's not even what he feels, that maybe he's carrying water for some other decision makers on the team?
Oh, I mean, that's certainly possible. I mean, but, you know, Dana Brown knew what he was getting into when he took this job. He knew Jim Crane. I mean, ever since the scandal, he's been very hands-on, and for good reason. He doesn't want something like that slipping past him again. So that's just part of the deal. Dana Brown's background in scouting, I think, is one of the big reasons he got hired, because the farm system is just one of the worst in baseball, and they're trying to fix that. And the sign-stealing, you know, penalties really hurt them, missing out on all those draft picks for a couple years. So it's an uphill battle. But yeah, I mean, the Michael Lorenzen signing with the Rangers, I think he got 1 year, $4.5 million. I know he hadn't done really anything yet, but he was at least a warm body. But Dana Brown couldn't have known, like, oh, you know, we're going to start the season with Verlander, Fromber, just all these guys down. Hunter Brown's going to come out and not be able to get out of first innings of baseball games. He couldn't have seen all this coming. They were, and I tweeted this out the other day, because of injuries, Hunter Brown is kind of your number two behind Javier right now, which is terrifying, right? But, you know, in reality, you know, Blanco is probably your number one and Javier is your number two. But on paper, the injuries they're dealing with, Hunter Brown is kind of your number two. They got to get something out of him. I don't think they thought he was going to take a step forward and be a quality pitcher and start building on that career. It just hasn't happened. And for me, I think he's not good at commanding the fastball and hitting spots. He's wild in the strike zone. And even though his stuff is good, these are big league hitters. You leave it over the plate. You know, umpires aren't going to give you pitches a little off the plate if you're missing the strike zone so often. So he's in a bad spot. He's got to get that fastball under control, because the stuff plays, but you got to be able to hit your spots.
You know, where does it come in on the spectrum? Plausible, best or good case scenario, and fantasy. You know, crossing your fingers, running around, gathering up rabbit's feet, four-leaf clover, and hoping for the best. But the notion is, once you get back the guys you expected to be your top two starters, and they join Javier and Blanco and whoever else on the roster is 4 or 5, right there, fingers crossed on Jose Urquidy. He wasn't good last year when he pitched the little bit that he was healthy. And then you're getting Garcia back. Garcia is going to be back after the All-Star break. McCullough is more of a question, but they're probably thinking at least one, so that they have these 7-8 options along the way to fill out the bingo card, that enough of them will line up to be okay. Now, the way the season's gone initially, all right, they're having to bail more water. You know, needed extra buckets to get that water out of the boat. So as they bide their time, do they have enough buckets, or is enough water flush in there that, the ship is sunk to a point where you're really not going to be able to bob back up to the surface and make your push? They're not close to being at that level yet, in part because the division looks rather weak, and in part because we're just into the second inning of the season this week.
I know Jeff Bagwell on the broadcast ruffled some feathers over the weekend with his comments about not knowing what ex-WOBA was as a stat. People seem to be outraged, going like, this is a guy who's advising Jim Crane. I think it was probably tongue-in-cheek more than anything. I think it's kind of a troll when it comes to the analytics audience and the baseball nerd crowd.
Well, I didn't see it, so you can't pick up the nuance sometimes if you just see or hear of the quotes, but I'm guessing he was not being tongue-in-cheek on that, and Bagwell doesn't know which stat was it.
Ex-WOBA.
And you know what? That's okay. Yeah. Because you have different people with different strengths and right, different perspectives and viewpoints. And I wouldn't hold it at all against Jeff Bagwell. You know, BABIP, I guess, is generally well known now in baseball circles that, okay, you should have an idea what that is. But, you know, FIP, there's some alphabet soup of analytics. So that doesn't bother me in Bagwell's case, because Jeff Luhnow, as the master architect of this era of Astros baseball, he didn't unilaterally make every decision. He didn't scout every player. You're always counting on the counsel of others and people who deal with specific statistical breakdowns. You know, the video on pitchers who are more likely to come up injured, and then even a little bit of the old scouts eyeball test. I don't know if a president is only as good as his cabinet, but who's in the cabinet and what's the quality of the group there? Or is it just crony golf buddies who it's fun to hang around with and have as your friends? I think some of that has crept into the Astros front office a little bit. Is it going to take them down and render this era shorter than it might otherwise have been? Keep listening.
And Lunau made mistakes. His resume is not without its own pot marks, too. I mean, again, when you build up a juggernaut the way he has, people tend to overlook that because it's the overall average of hits that he had. But Verlander's not an Astro without Jim Crane pushing for it, if you believe the reports. Same with Zach Greinke. And for perspective, listen to Yankees fans and how jealous that they are that Reggie Jackson is a part of the Astros front office and the Yankees wanted nothing to do with him. We don't know to what level and what influence Reggie Jackson has, but it would be the equivalent of us watching the Yankees have a dynastic run with Craig Biggio advising in the front office.
Well, they got office.
Yeah. The quote's interesting, and I don't know if we're reading too much into it, but I just wanted to get your perspective on that. That's going to be it for this episode of Stone Cold Stros. If you listen on podcasts and you enjoyed the show, please be sure to give us a 5-star rating. Charlie, Josh, and I will catch you next week. But you don't have to wait that long to get your Houston Sports Fix. All you have to do is subscribe to Sports Map Houston on YouTube and Sports Map Texans as well. We'll have some bonus content during the week for you there. And until next time, go Stros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.